Chairman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Oh, we have
he's joining in too.
We have a distinguished visitor today.
Extinguished. Oh, distinguished.
Hey, easy now. You guys are part of the same club. Mr. President, you and Fischbach are part of the same club. Members, call to order the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. We have two bills in front of the committee today, but we only have one author because Senator Miller gave me a call last night. So he's carrying the second bill that we were going to hear today. His newborn is fine, but had to stay one extra day in the hospital. I think a little jaundice was the phrase that was used. So we've got more time to hang out with Senator Fischbach then.
Mr. Chair, I am excited to be here.
And you don't look like you're suffering from any jaundice, so this is good.
Thank you.
This is good. So, members, we have Senate File 1416, and Senator Fischbach, we welcome you to the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. I have at least two names down here, and I think there might be someone from the Department of Public Safety. I don't know if she's still available. So why don't I turn it over first to Senator Fischbach. And I understand you have an amendment, so we can go in whatever order you'd like to do, Senator Fischbach.
Well, Mr. Chair, it is an author's amendment, so if it's acceptable to you, Mr. Chair, we can just offer that A1 amendment to just put it in the into the form that we'd like it in. So
all right, let me make sure.
I think that they said that there was copies of the A1 amendment.
Does everyone have the A1?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'll...
Thank you. So Senator Metzen offers the A1 as an author's amendment and put it into the format that we'll then hear the testimony for. So all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. So the A1 is adopted.
Thank you.
To Senate File 1416. Senator Fischbach.
And basically, Senate File 1416 allows the department to issue a title for a manufactured home. There, it provides a definition of the manufactured home, and this is necessary in order to affix the manufactured home to real property. And I know that Mr. Bruner will describe it in more detail and answer questions, but there are several requirements that the owner must meet before the title would be issued. Those include things like information like the make and the model of the manufactured home. So it's really just to put this in order for those owners to be able to get a title issued. In addition, I'm assuming that you do have a copy of the fiscal note. I don't know if you Xeroxed those, but the A1 amendment, to the best of my understanding, will eliminate a lot of, if not all of that. So what we would be asking today, Mr. Chair, is if we could move it along to transportation after the discussion, and then we would be issued a new fiscal note with the A1 in accordance with the A1 amendment. But I think Mr. Bruner would probably like to explain a little more in detail Senate File 1416 with the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach. Let me just make sure. So I'm told we have a fiscal note, mm-hmm. Though I don't see it.
I've got it.
I see one for Senator Miller's bill.
Oh, it is.
I have a copy if you needed to make Xeroxes of it.
That's good.
Okay.
If you have it, that's more important than me. Do members have a copy of the...
Yes.
I do.
Yes.
You do. Yeah, it's right
here. And like I said, Mr. Chair, essentially the A1 amendment either greatly reduces it or eliminates it, and we will be able... We haven't been issued a new fiscal note in accordance with the A1 amendment, but we will be when we get to Transportation Committee.
Right. So members, our intent would be to look at this, of course, more from the manufactured home perspective. That's what falls into this committee. The fiscal note, which now may be dated by the A1 that we've adopted, the fiscal note is particularly the Department of Public Safety. So that's another reason to send this from the Jobs Committee today to Transportation to deal with that. So with that, let's go to Mr. Bruner then. If you could just welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And give your name and organization for the record, please.
Yeah, Mark Bruner. I'm with the Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota. I want to thank Senator Fischbach for bringing this bill to you. The essentially what the bill does is allows the Department of Public Safety to issue a title for a manufactured home that previously never had a title with it, because when it was new, it was affixed to real property and financed with a conventional mortgage. This requirement that there be no title issued for a manufactured home affixed to real estate came about in 2005 when U.S. Bank, at the request of Freddie Mac, issued a memorandum. Minnesota was affected, and essentially what U.S. Bank said, and then other mortgage companies sort of piled on, was that any state that issues a title for a manufactured home that's going to be affixed to real property and financed with a conventional mortgage, that issues a title and then requires that that title subsequently be surrendered, doesn't fall within the requirements they need to write a conventional mortgage. Essentially, the laws needed to be changed. We got notice of this about 2 weeks before the end of session. We at that time were building, selling about 4,000 new manufactured homes a year, and 80% of those were going on real estate. The legislature changed the Minnesota law at that time so that no title would be issued for a new manufactured home that was being affixed to real property. And the problem that solved was, I think it was in the state of Michigan, a court case that had just come out where a similar law to what Minnesota had, the title should have been surrendered, the home was affixed to real property, financed with a conventional mortgage, but the homeowner never did actually surrender the title. They took the free and clear title to a local bank, got a second mortgage on the home. The home went into foreclosure. The court determined that the local bank that was holding the title to that home had a priority lien over the mortgage company. And the lenders had determined is that they couldn't operate in any state that had that type of environment. In the process of getting Minnesota's law changed, there was never a provision or authority put in statute that allowed the Department of Public Safety to issue a title for a manufactured home when none had ever been issued previously. You know, currently, they can issue a duplicate title if one is lost, that kind of thing. So following the foreclosure or the housing bubble burst in 2007, our office got a few calls from some of our members who had purchased a manufactured home that had been unaffixed from real property, and they applied for a title from the Department of Public Safety so they could resell the home. The department said, you know, we'd like to help you, but we really don't have the authority to do it. What the bill does is gives them that authority. The amendment that you adopted is something we worked on with the department that essentially the idea is that someone can bring an affidavit to the department that acknowledges that the manufactured home is free and clear of any encumbrances, liens, that kind of thing, and so that the department's not liable for any errors in the statements of fact and can proceed to issue a title for that manufactured home. I mean, that is what the bill does.
And Ms. McCormick, I don't know if there's anything you want to put on the record in front of our committee this morning, but I know you were a part of some discussions, so I'd give you that opportunity. Please introduce yourself for the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. And the department has been working with the Manufactured Housing Home Association on this compromise that's before you in the amendment to the bill. And we do support it. We are working on the funding side of it, but as was stated previously by the senator, the fiscal note that you have received was the fiscal note based on the original legislation, and this amendment would streamline the process so that we may still need a position, but we certainly don't need three positions. And the two of the positions, one was a supervisor and the other one was a paralegal, and we would not need that because we would receive the information we need without us doing further investigation.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Senator Kreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, I have a question. Is there an age limit at all on where you could, you know, there are some really old mobile homes that you can't get the information to submit a title, or do you know?
Ms. McCormick, or maybe Mr. Bruner might want to handle that one, too. But
Ms. McCormick. Mr. Chair and Senator DeKreif, I'm not aware of that specifically. I do know that we have many challenges, but I'm not sure if Mr. Bruner knows that or not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, my understanding is that, you know, even, you know, older manufactured homes, at least that were built from 1974 to current, all have a serial number. That's a part of the home that could be used to help reissue a title that may have been lost. I mean, in any home at that time would have had a title issued at one point, so somebody should be able to track that.
Mr. Chair, I just know that sometimes there has been problems in locating the serial number, but that isn't anything that I've had detailed discussions on, but it has come up when we've talked about with a vehicle services staff. So,
okay. Senator Kielash.
Just for some clarification. Why does a manufactured home have a title in the first place? I can see if it's on the road being used that way, but if it's being moved from one mobile home park to another, that's one thing. And there's also manufactured homes that are, in fact, several units and they're stacked or whatever. So I'm a little confused as to what this doesn't really cover the ones that are on the road on a regular basis. It covers the ones that are set in place and left for whatever period of time, I think. And could you clarify that for me?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator, first let me differentiate between a manufactured home and a modular home. They're built in the same plant. A modular home would be the one, especially might be like a two-story home, brought in modules and stacked. There would be no titles whatsoever. All of those homes are affixed to real estate or real property. There's no title involved. A manufactured home, at least, you know, traditionally from when they were first built, for the most part were personal property, not affixed to real estate. So the title is the way of conveying ownership with those homes. What we did in 2005 was, maybe more to your point, is eliminated a title for any manufactured home that was going to become real estate or affixed to real property, so no title was issued whatsoever. In the situation we're addressing right now, somebody elects to have that home unaffixed or severed from real property and would like to resell it, perhaps because it will become personal property, put on leased land, so they need a title in order to do that. It's essentially sort of changing its type of category from real property to personal property.
Ms. McCormick,
Senator Kielash?
Yeah, just to follow up, it's still, I view titles like for mobile homes or for cars or whatever is different than a piece of property that, you know, we move houses, we don't, you know, manufactured or not. So I don't think you need a title for the house to move that, do you, on the road?
No.
So I'm trying to get an idea of the difference in why motor vehicle needs to, DMV needs to be involved in this transaction at all.
Mr. Bruner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm understanding the reason they're involved is because they have always been or currently are the agency that handles titles for manufactured homes. It's not necessary to have the title to transport the home, but it is for somebody to convey ownership and sell it when it's personal property.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, I would agree with what Mr. Brunner is saying, that has always been the case, and it is allowed in the statutes, and so we have been the agency that issues the title.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you categorize then this bill as an effort to make it easier for people to buy and sell manufactured homes? Is that kind of the gist of this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I mean, I guess what it, you know, what the bill does is, yes, in that regard, if somebody has a manufactured, let's say the home is, and the home and real estate are in foreclosure, for example, and it could be the owner of the home, it could be the bank that would be able to sell the home separate from the real estate. So right now they can't get the title for that home to accomplish that. So the bill would, in that regard, make it easier for somebody to sell a home that's currently affixed to real property.
All right. So Senator Fischbach, is there any more testimony that you wish to bring today? If not, I'll ask if there's anyone else in the room who wishes to testify on Senate File 1416. Any concluding remarks, Senator Fischbach? Maybe we should rough you up a little bit.
Mr. Chair, you know, I'm in front of your committee. I'm at your mercy, so. But so far, you've been really nice, so you wouldn't want to mess that up either.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've been gone.
Mr. Chairman, move
it. Senator Tomasoni, there we go.
There you go.
Do you need somebody to move the bill?
I don't know. Do we?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, yes, we do need
somebody. I'd be happy to move the bill.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni.
Very good. So, members, the Tomasoni motion would be that Senate File 1416, as amended, would be recommended to pass and move to transportation. Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator
Thank you, Mr.
Fischbach.
Chair.
Mr.
Thank
Bruner
you guys.
And Ms.
Thank
McCormick.
Committee members.
Mr. Rakowski in the room.
I can move over here.
So, members, what I'd like to do then on Senate File 1717, because we are without our author, although this is very much an excused absence for Mr. Miller, for Senator Miller. So I'd like to have Mr. Rakowski from the Department of Labor and Industry go through the bill. I think is it fair to describe this? This is a department bill. I'll let you categorize it in any other way you wish, Mr. Rakowski. But mm-hmm. so we can take testimony. And I also understand there's an amendment. Formally, we can't move the amendment, but we could share the language with each other and do what we need to do today so that we could take up and quickly move this bill tomorrow, assuming Senator Miller makes it back. So, members, unless there's questions on that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Rakowski for some description now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. When there's an extra copy of the amendment, I'd be happy to start with that.
And Mr. Rakowski, is this a delete all?
No.
Okay, it's not. So we need both in front of us. So, right. Members, we are now handing out the A-12. Why don't you wait for a minute here, Mr. Rakowski, until we all have the language in front of us.
Thank you.
So, members, we have the Senate File 1717 is introduced. We have the A-12. We have a summary, a Senate Council summary, and we also have a fiscal note. Mm-hmm. And we have Mr. Rakowski.
Thank you, members. I have to say, after all these many years, it's a little unsettling being up here all by myself without a senator. But thank you for hearing the bill.
Want me to sit by you?
Sorry?
To sit by you?
It's all right, Mr. Former Chairman. You sat with me enough over the years. Every year, our agency, and I presume all agencies, ask their managers and directors to review statutes and rules for what we call an annual housekeeping or technical corrections bill. We are a regulatory agency, as you know. We license over 140,000. If I could still get in a copy of the amendment, please. Oh, you put it over there. We regulate and license about 140,000 30,000 individuals and businesses. So it's, and this is in the construction industry. And as you know, it's a volatile, fluid industry. And the statute that was created when we consolidated all the construction code and licensing functions in 2007 is under 326B. It's a rather lengthy statute because of that. So that's how the bill started. It was just dealing with technical changes within 326B, what I call the building code statute. But then at the end of 2011, it was brought to the attention of our labor standards and apprenticeship unit. It was brought to their attention by the Federal Department of Labor that they had reviewed some changes the state of Minnesota had made 2 years ago, again in a housekeeping bill, where we had updated terms of usage in the apprenticeship program. Some of you probably aren't aware that we're a state-run apprenticeship program, but the Federal Department of Labor certifies the programs, and also the language, which is under Chapter 178.01. Anyway, long story short is they had missed some changes in their first round of reviewing this language from 2 years ago, and so this is their attempt to give their final edits, if you will. So that's what this – it looks like a rather lengthy amendment, but it's essentially federal wordsmithing is what I call it. So it's consistent with federal law. So tomorrow this will renumber the sections, but I'll go through the bill as it was introduced. Sections 1 and 2, as I said, deal with the licensing operations, which we do at the state. And both of these amendments in sections 1 and 2 relate to the processing of the licenses. What this is attempting to do is make the process of applying for a license for the construction people more streamlined. Currently, right now, if they forget one piece of information, we send them a notice back in the, U.S. Postal Mail saying, you forgot this, we can't issue your license until it's complete, and they go back and forth, and, it's classic red tape that we've been talking about this year more than anything in other committees. So this is an attempt to cutting some of that red tape. The amendment in Subdivision 2 would require the original license application to include the contractor recovery fee at the time of the application. That's for residential contractors. Currently, we require the fee later. It slows down the process. So this is streamlining. This way, we'll eliminate multiple back-and-forth mailings. It's costly both to the businesses and to the department, so we'll actually be saving some money there, I hope. The amendment in Subdivision 7 would make the license renewal fee the same as the original license fee, which apparently it currently isn't now, so this should avoid confusion in the future after this becomes law. Section 3 is an oddity, and I mentioned Senator Miller. When I gave him this bill, he did contact his local county assessor, so he has done his due diligence. He has checked it out with his local county assessor, and they have no problem with this language. Under the current definition of ag buildings, building officials have had difficulty determining whether the land on which the structure is located is ag land. So the amendment tries to solve this difficulty by requiring a building official to consult with a county assessor or the appropriate municipal assessor to determine how the land is classified. The ag lobby has weighed in on this over in the House with Representative Mike Lemire, and they're, we explained to the ag lobby that this is actually helpful to people of ag who own ag property. They also supported the change. It also deals with some terms here. Apparently, we use the term agricultural products to include produce, so the term produce can be eliminated. So it's updating the current statute. In sections 4 and 5, it deals with an issue that's been, frankly, kind of a plaguing the department ever since we consolidated all the construction code and licensing functions at the Department of Labor and Industry in 2007. When the plumbing inspections were at the Department of Health, they used the term plumber's apprentice over at the Department of Health, but when they moved over to our department, we use the term unlicensed individual because we try to avoid confusion with our apprenticeship program, which actually has registered plumber's apprentice. So sections 4 and 5 attempt to eliminate the term plumber apprentice, and I believe it changes it to unlicensed individuals. And finally, last but not least, I've been actually looking forward to talking about Section 6. We're repealing obsolete rules, and this has been the topic of discussion in many committees this year. Under a statute that's been in existence as long as I've been at the department, every December, our attorneys put their heads together with the supervisors and the directors and comb through the rule books and the statute books and eliminate any obsolete or duplicative rules. We always put this in our housekeeping bill. And I can go through some of the repealers if you'd like. It's pretty exciting stuff because we're actually, one of the things we've been hearing in these committee hearings is that there's too many rules, they should be in statute. And what we attempt to do with most of these rules, we are putting them into the 326B statute. And previous to the creation of 326B, they were all in rule. And I'll be quiet. I haven't talked this long in committee without a question in a long time.
Well, Mr. Rakowski, could you touch upon
all of them?
Senator Metzen would like it if you touch upon all of them. It's hard for us to look at Section 6 and really, it's just
right.
A bunch of numbers.
Right, right.
But we have had a lot of discussion about the rules and regs, and here you go, and this is something you want to brag about, so take a moment, if you will.
We went a little too far last year, and I had to put some rules back relating to tip credits. You might remember that last year, so to be very careful with what you carve out.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, you're right. I think a suggestion might be to put some summaries in here. Thank you. My legal counsel did this for me. Rules 1301.1201 is renumbered into the Construction Code Statute 326B. So that was an oversight. It should have been done a couple of years ago. So that rule is now obsolete because the language is concluded in the statute. 1302.660, this needs to be removed because that's also contained in Minnesota Statute 326B. So that makes it obsolete, so it should be repealed. And then the whole series of 3801s to 3790, this is the Electrical Act, rules in the Electrical Act, which is now enforced under 326B.081 and .085. And I'm taking this as gospel from my legal counsel. I have not checked the references in statute books. So that makes all these rules obsolete because they're in statute.
So Mr. Rakowski, just so I'm using the right words, I'm not sure you're actually getting rid of any of the language. You're just saying it doesn't need to be in two places.
Correct. It's repetitive. It's duplicative.
Senator Daley's noting that, so... There are still rules and regs or statutes that folks will need to follow.
Absolutely. I think we promulgate rules for, I've testified on OSHA. OSHA's actually done, they're not called rules, they're called standards because that's a term of that the Federal Department of Labor uses. And tomorrow we're hearing a bill with Senator Daley on window washing in the building code. And we took out some language pertaining to training in the bill as it was first introduced because that language is now in the standard, which will become effective March 1st. So it's no need to have it in law and in the standard. And, of course, we do workers' comp, and there's a ton of rulemaking there by law. And we do rulemaking in the construction code and licensing division through the three authoritative boards, which were created, I think, in 2007 under David Tomasoni's watch. Those are authoritative boards. So the department doesn't create the rules. Our legal services department provides the expertise to the boards, which are made up of citizens from the industry. We have an electrical board, we have a plumbing board, and high-pressure piping board. For those members who are kind of new to the committee, I thought I'd give that background.
I have Senator Howe.
Would this be a good place to put that steam fitters question in?
This is a non-controversial bill, Representative Hall, so you might want to find another vehicle for that.
Right.
We had a discussion on high-pressure piping yesterday.
Yeah. But it appears that we'd have 3,000 additional workers if we did that.
Yes, sir.
The question, Mr. Chair, relates to Section 3, the agricultural building.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not sure if you can answer this, or maybe we need Senate counsel to answer this, but does it mean that do they need to meet any one of those three criteria, or do they need to meet all of that criteria?
Senator Howard, you're going off the bill, or are you off on the amendment?
I'm looking at the
you're at the bill.
Bill, yep. At point 2.31, Section 3, agricultural building. My question is do they just need to meet one of those three? And I can't tell by just reading this sheet without looking at it, or do they have to meet all three of that criteria?
All three.
I would defer to Senate counsel. I would not a lawyer, but I would think all three of them.
Ms. Fontaine.
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, I think on line 2.36, I think you need all three. At the end of the sentence, the end of the line, there's an and. So I think that means that you would need to meet all three.
Well,
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, at the end of 2.34, there isn't, but is that just a run-on there? So that's all one section, so they'd have to meet all three of those points?
Ms. Fontaine.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Howe. On line 2.34, there's a semicolon, and so then, between one and two, there's just a semicolon, and then between two and three, there's an and, so I would take that to mean that you do need all to meet all three criteria. Agricultural building means a structure that is clause one, those items, clause two, and clause three.
Sorry,
Mr. Chair, my concern is that with that semicolon, that if it's just located on agricultural land, it qualifies, and then two and three could be the joining. That's my concern, because you might have a auto repair shop located on agricultural land. My concern is about that semicolon. Is that separating that it's just located on ag land, and then two and three is together?
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, normally that's the semicolon is just what we use to separate clauses. It's functions as a comma, so all three should be taken together. I think that the way that the languages in the amendment is that they should all be taken together. That's just the normal way that we separate clauses in drafting. And just for a point of reference, the agricultural buildings are exempt from the state building code, so they're trying to say that this is what an agricultural building is, and they are exempt from the state building code, and this would be determined by the assessor based on the tax law that defines what agricultural property is, and that's on line 2.34, that's chapter 273, that is the tax reference.
Mr. Chair, as long as counsel's comfortable that it's all three, that I wanted to make sure that it was all three on that criteria. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to go over the fiscal note, which kind of came to me as a little bit of a surprise, but it was explained to me before the committee, so it makes sense to me now.
Trukowski, your department did the fiscal note.
We did.
So I don't want to hear that there's surprises.
Well, I'm up here and they're down there. That's the only reason for that. They do a fine job. They turn them around usually in 24 hours, which is pursuant to the legislative auditor's report, I understand. But as I said earlier in my comments, Mr. Chairman and members, this is the construction code industry is a fluid industry. People, especially in the residential building contractor end of it, we anticipate 985 new licensees next year, which is the bulk of the fiscal note. People come retire. People decide to go into the business, and they need to have a license with us. So this reflects a one-time license of new individuals. Same is true with 567 electrical licensees and 34 building official licensees for the next biennium. So that's why there's a minor fiscal impact of about $32,000 in the out year, $31,720 to be precise. Hope that helps.
So, Mr. Rakowski, did we go through the amendment as much as you'd like? You sounded like you were trying to refer to it as kind of federal language and wordsmithing. Is there anything else the committee needs to understand on that? We can't act on the amendment today, but like to tomorrow. So is there anything else you need to do on the amendment or any other testimony that you wish to bring forward today?
No, sir. I'm satisfied with my comments to the extent that I've made them.
Members, are you satisfied with Mr. Rakowski's comments? Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rakowski, in the repealer, I just want to clarify and make sure that I understood correctly. I believe that you said that the 3801.364 or whatever through 3790 was all part of the, was it the plumbing code?
The electrical act.
Electrical. But the 3801, 3800, was that included in that electrical or is that something additional?
Maybe the things.
Mr. Rakowski.
That's included in it.
That is included.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So, Mr. Rakowski, while we have you, could you give the committee a sense for, this is the first department bill that we've taken up this session. It sounds like there's a few more. We have Senator Daley's tomorrow, but could you at least highlight, I think there's four, including this, there's four department bills total that you'd like us to act on this session. Could you just summarize those for us?
Certainly. Thank you for the opportunity. As you know, we go through a pretty rigorous review process through the governor's office and the management and budget office. Even with policy bills, they have a pretty extensive review process. Tomorrow, a bill came forward, it's not a governing statute of either commerce or labor and industry. It's 325. It's the homeowner warranty statute, and our enforcement director Charlie Durenberger, who's testified in front of this committee before, brought to my attention that there's what might be called a loophole in the home solicitation section of the law, and what we found is that homeowners can get caught in not being able to get out from under a contract within 3 days, and there's some in the Twin Cities. There's a couple of, and there's only a few, I might say, that few companies that take advantage of this. And when the homeowner tries to get out from under a contract, like say a new siding on a home, which would be several thousand dollars, or a new roof, they cite a Court of Appeals decision from 2007 that said that they can't get out from under the contract unless they pay 25% of the original contract, which can be thousands of dollars. They complained to the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office says it's under our authority, so we have a bill that Senator Daley is going to be carrying, and it also has the endorsement of the Better Business Bureau. The other bill that Senator Daley is carrying deals with trying to put into future in the building code that we're now in the process of adopting. We're asking the legislature to include in new buildings over four stories or more permanent anchoring systems on commercial buildings to improve safety, window washing, window cleaners, because tragically the state has seen four fatalities in 5 years, which is statistically, from OSHA standards, ridiculous. California hasn't had any fatalities, and other warm weather states where they do window washing all year long. So that's a good bill. Senator Day was carrying that with some other members of the committee, I might add, have co-authored that as well as the other one. And last but not least, Senator Peterson we redid a bill that stalled in the legislative process last year that deals with enforcing subcontractors who knowingly are using workers who aren't covered under workers' comp and aren't paying their payroll taxes or unemployment insurance. The three agencies, Revenue, Labor and Industry, and DEEB, work together to try to uncover some of these guys because it's an extremely unfair playing field. So, Senator, that bill was the product of a task force last year. We've trimmed it down significantly this year to a two-year pilot project with no cost to individuals to register with the state. So you'll be hearing from Senator Peterson on that one, too. That's the world of labor and industry. And no workers' comp bill this year. You'll be glad to know, but maybe next year.
Well, Senator Rakowski, does that mean the advisory council has huddled and met and thought and debated and has decided that there will be nothing in that arena this session?
As of now, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. They met, I believe, on February 8th, and Senator Peterson actually brought forth a number of initiatives which as some of you know, the council is made up of six representatives of labor and six representatives of industry. It's chaired by the AFL-CIO and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I think there'll be certainly an appetite next year because medical costs are increasing for businesses. Senator Peterson, for some inexplicable reason, his insurance premiums went up last year, and he didn't even have a reportable injury last year at his plant up in St. Cloud. However, I directed him to the Department of Commerce, not the Department of Labor and Industry. We don't set the insurance rates. And since I have the, I'll make a shameless plug for the department. In June, I believe June 14th at Cragen's, and I think it's official, we'll be having our third workers' comp policy conference at Cragen's on the shores of beautiful Gull Lake, and many of you members would be more than happy to attend. For a small fee, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Rakowski.
I went back on.
So, members, the plan then would be to take up what we'll formally notice Senate File 1717 again for tomorrow's committee. We'd then adopt the A-12 and move this on. This bill would then go to finance. Is that right, Mr. Rakowski?
Yes, Senator.
Okay, so we'll hope to have Senator Miller with us. We believe that will be the case, although we believed he'd be here today. So, members, any other – so we can't act on the bill, but I think we've at least been educated on it and briefed on it, and we'll be able to act quicker, more quickly tomorrow. Senator Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a co-author of the bill that if Senator Miller isn't here can
– We almost did – we were going to make you the co-author yesterday, Senator Metzen, but then we were – at that point, he was – Senator Miller was confirmed to be here, so we –
Yeah, because usually we just turn it over and then pass it. I should know this. Is there a prohibition against us doing it without the author? I mean, we're all in agreement on this thing, and have to be here? I don't know that. Maybe I should know that. We'll check that out. If he's not here and it's possible to do it without him or her, it's him this time, we'll do it, or I would suggest we do it.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Thank you, Senator Metzen. So, members, we're looking at the calendar. We got about a month until the first deadline, and so we're trying to work in department bills, the governor's jobs legislation, which I think we have three or four of the five pieces that would come in front of this committee. We've got some confirmations still to act on. We've got some other member bills, and then the rest of the departments that come to us. So I think it's going to work, but we'll probably have to pick up the pace over the next couple of weeks. Consider the next 39 minutes as a gift.
Oh, joy.
As a gift. And, Mr. Rakowski, thank you for walking through the bill. The committee's adjourned.
Mr. Chair, does this mean Miller gets a pass?